Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geek Actually After Show, episode 92 for the 10th of July, 2010. Boy, it's a mouthful to get all that out. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined once again by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing well, man. I'm still doing well.
Your camera's gone kind of blue. You've gone kind of blue on me, Josh.
I've got a new tinge. This is actually the CSI way of filming. We're both doing the same thing, but with entirely different filters.
I think the little camera
Bazinga.
Is getting a little bit tired, maybe. Anyway, we'll move on. All right, so this is the Geek Actually After Show, and we put our usual disclaimer here, which, of course, is if you are just joining us for the first time, this is not the main show. This is basically where we keep the mics on afterwards, and we just kind of ramble on. And normally there's no structure to the Geek Actually After Show, but every now and again that kind of changes. This week is one of those weeks, because we actually have, for the next 2 weeks, two mini-movies coming out.
Yeah.
And we don't want to ignore all these movies, so we're actually throwing in a bonus film review this week, which is, of course, The Runaways, which is the new film about Joan Jett and The Runaways, and we will come to that in just a minute. First, we're just going to do a little bit of a tidy-up housekeeping and so forth, as we like to do on this show. Just to remind everybody, because our audio listeners, this is 3 days later, just to remind you, on Saturday, the structure of the shows change, and a decision has been reached. On the main show, we were kind of debating it. A decision has been reached. We are going to create a third feed, because the thought occurred to me that those who only want tech but would like to also listen to the after show, the way it's structured at the moment, they're going to have to download the film show anyway, because it'll be on the feed. So we've decided to break the three shows up onto three separate feeds. So the Geek Actually feed, the existing feed right now that you're getting this show off of right now, will be the after show. We are going, the tech feed that already exists, that Geek Actually Tech was going out on, is going to be Tech Actually, and we are going to create a brand new feed for Film Actually, which we will post the links up for on geekactually.com. Yeah. So that will be established this week at some point. It's going to be a little bit messy for the first couple of weeks. I'm well aware of that. People are going to be trying to find us all over the place, and it's going to be a bit messy. And for the next few weeks, we will just keep reminding people about how this is all breaking up, okay? If you want to know more about the way the shows are breaking up into individual components, go to geekactually.com. I put a big post up about it, and you can find out there. Or if you listen to the last show, we also talked about it there. And we will continually remind people as goes on. All right, Josh, what you been up to this week? Now, I know you just watched Scanners, didn't you?
No.
Actually,
I didn't get around to it.
Oh, no.
I put it, it's actually currently in the player. It's just that last night I put that in and then went out to get food and came back and I was tired as all hell.
To explain, I'm kind of introducing Josh to a whole bunch of early Cronenberg. And because for those who are only just discovering Cronenberg now, you're seeing The Eastern Promises and you're seeing The History of Violence and stuff.
But Cronenberg, all these films, I had no idea that Cronenberg was actually involved.
Yeah.
Films I've seen and didn't actually tie the name to the project.
There you go. Cronenberg's been around for an awful long time, and he actually started his career as a horror film director. I mean, that's what he did. He did horror films. And the bizarre. Very bizarre. He's kind of Lynchian, almost, in his way of thinking. Not quite as out there as Lynch, though. At least he tells a coherent story, on the most part. If you want to find out Josh's opinions on Videodrome, another early Cronenberg film. Now, in 1983, when Videodrome came out, this was controversial shit, let me tell you.
Oh, and you know what? It took me a while, and the reason that it took me so long from then to the point where I actually put up the review was literally because I just had to go back and look at the effect that it had back at that day. Because when you watch it now, yes, it's bad, but it's not...
Gross bad.
No, it's gross bad, you know. But it's not that way in a way that you had...
What? Sorry, our chat room just caught our eye. It says, Josh just did a Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, right, okay. but yeah, no... though it, you know, is controversial even now, it's not as powerful as it was when you look back at the reviews and stuff like that at the time.
I remember when Videodrome came out, there people were trying to get it banned. They were protesting it. And they were saying it was the grossest thing ever released. People were vomiting in the cinema. It's just unbelievable. And, I mean, by today's standards, it's actually relatively tame. But it's out there.
Oh, it's
the concepts are out there.
It's never going to be confused with a film that isn't.
No. And, of course, Cronenberg also did films like Rabid, which was controversial in its day as well, because he actually cast a porn star as the lead actress. It was Marilyn Chambers, who went on to do Insatiable and stuff like that, as the lead in his horror film Rabid, which is also a really good film. And she actually puts in a very good performance. Mm. And, of course, the one he's got in his machine right now, which is Scanners, which has led to mini sequels and spin-offs like Scanner Cop and all this sort of nonsense. But Cronenberg only had anything to do with the first one. And the first one is still a very interesting... It's actually, once again, the thing that makes Cronenberg such an interesting filmmaker is, like Romero, he's touching on subjects of the day and putting them into these freaky-ass environments. Videodrome was all about the obsession with videotape and snuff films and all this sort of stuff, and in how this could
Just also that whole world of kind of human behavior and sex and politics and you know, sort of, it envelops so much of its time in the film.
Scanners, of course, is really a statement about thalidomide babies and the concept of women who take drugs during pregnancy and untested drugs, and we don't know what the results of those pregnancies will be on the effects of these drugs. And so it really kind of tackles that. And there's, so his films always have these very, very strong messages wrapped into these very surreal bundles, bundles of joy. And when we talk about surreal, we get to William Burroughs' The Naked Lunch, which everybody considered to be completely unfilmable. And when Cronenberg was approached by the producers to say, what would be your next film? He said, I want to do The Naked Lunch. And they all kind of went, oh, my God. And he did it. And he actually made a film version. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but he made a film version of The Naked Lunch. And it's pretty out there. Peter Weller stars in it. And it is really, really something to behold. It's mind-boggling. And the next film, of course, I'm going to pass on to Josh after he's finished Scanners, will be the Jeremy Irons film, Dead Ringers.
Yeah,
which is actually kind of loosely based on real life, which is kind of freaky as well. It's about the identical twin doctors. Jeremy Irons playing both roles, and it's actually it's a very interesting film. Kind of, it's one of those films where we walked out of the cinema, myself and three friends, when we went to see it years ago, and we all walked out silent. And nobody could actually say anything for about half an hour, because you're going, what the hell did I just watch? So I love Cronenberg. I think he's a very talented man and a very spooky looking man who has done acting in his own right as well. For those who have seen To Die For with Nicole Kidman, he plays that very sinister, weird hitman near the end of the film. And he's fantastic. Anyway, so when you get around to Scanners, we will talk about that in the next after show, because I'd really like to hear your opinions on it. Now, in the main show, which the audio listeners would have got 3 days ago, our esteemed chat room is still with us because we're recording this straight afterwards. I have the audio of Mel Gibson.
Wow.
I hope. Now, I haven't actually tested this.
Oh, wow. This could be interesting.
This could be interesting. Huffington Post has actually got a link to it, and I was just speaking to Mirren downstairs, and she said that it does work. So we're going to fire this up and have a listen to the actual rant. Now, we actually talked about this on the main show. We read off quotes from it, and once again, I apologize to listeners in advance. Over
disclaimer,
what
we do hold an explicit tag.
We do hold an explicit tag, and this is Mel's words, not ours, but it is our duty to report on this. And here is Mel Gibson's rant, apparently. Wait for it. It's coming. It's loading. It's saying it's loading.
It's going to crash the board.
It's actually not in the board. It's in a browser. Come on, load. Oh, here we go. I see a player. I see
trying to breastfeed with fucking foreign bodies in you. Was that it?
That has nothing to do with it.
Oh, it had nothing to do with what? The fact that you had foreign bodies in there?
Correct.
Correct, okay, good. So you're not lying to me about fake tits?
I've never have.
Yes, yes, you just did. You said they weren't. You fucking lied to me before.
What? I didn't. I never said said anything of the kind. You never asked me, I never told you. Or maybe you asked me, but I never lied about this.
Did you notice they were fake?
Not a lie, who cares? So, they look ridiculous. Get rid of them, why don't you? Anyway, you know.
That's not none of your fucking business.
It is. They look stupid. I'm just telling you. It's just an appraisal. Keep them if you want. Look stupid. See if I give a fuck. You know, but they're too big and they look stupid. They look like some Vegas bitch. They look like a Vegas whore. Mm-hmm. And you go around sashaying around in your tight clothes and stuff. I won't stand for that anymore.
I don't walk around.
I don't want to be that.
I don't work around in tight clothes. I stay at home for most of the time.
You go out public and it's a fucking embarrassment to me. You look like a fucking bitch on heat. And if you get raped by a pack of niggers, it'll be your fault. All right? Because you provoked it. You are provocatively dressed all the time with your fake boobs you feel you have to show off in tight outfits and tight pants and stuff. You see your pussy from behind. And that green thing today was enough. That's provocative. Okay? I'm telling you. I'm just telling you the truth. I don't like it. I don't want that woman. I don't want you. I don't believe you anymore. I don't trust you. I don't love you. I don't want you. Okay?
Okay.
Stay in the fucking house. I'm not giving it to you, but I'll let you stay there. Okay?
Oh.
And I will take care of my child, but I don't want you anymore.
Wow.
Oh,
Mel.
Jesus.
Wow, that is just vicious.
I
mean, we read quotes from that on the main show, but it's not until you actually hear him go off. He's just bitter and angry, and Jay Raggy has basically said Gibson needs a punch in the head, no longer an Aussie.
He was never an Aussie thing.
Northy's just gone, wow. It's like, oh my God. Oh, yeah, Callison's good news. He never was an Aussie. Absolutely true.
Dude, but just the way she reacts as well, it's just like, that is so wrong. It's just the way that she's just taking it as he just fucking abuses the crap out of her. Man, that is so awful.
That is just awful. I'm glad we finally got the audio, though, because it's not quite the same until you actually hear it. But boy, I tell you what, man, I would just, I have no real interest.
Yeah.
No real interest in Mel anymore. I think he's blown his wad.
There's a level where we stop using the line, you have to separate the actor from the personality. And it's like when you start being like that, I'm not giving you money. Yeah. No, I'm not going to see a film.
DJ Callum in our chat room has just said, I want to see those fake shit tits. I hear they're ridiculous. Oh, Callum.
Oh, God.
All right. So once again, we do carry an explicit tag, and those words are not ours. We do not share his sentiments on anything, basically. He is, quite frankly, a prick. And and I think in our main show, our chat room had highlighted the fact that didn't he once make a film about knowing what women want? Well, yeah, obviously not. So now, let me just, can we get a tally on this now? Who has he actually offended? He has now offended Jews.
The blacks.
Jews, the Mexicans. Women. Anybody else? So are we?
Those are the only ones I'm aware of.
Those are the ones we're aware of. If the chat room wants to chime in, we'll keep a tally on this. Mel Gibson, by my accounts, that's actually 4 strikes.
The English language. Okay, so it's 5. No, that deserves a 5th.
Yeah.
So yeah, all right, we'll hold that. So we've got 5.
And women with fake breasts?
Women. Yeah, there you go. So fake-breasted women.
Just who he's gone after, apparently. actually, Numero Zero says, well, he's probably offended everyone.
Did he, Muslims?
I don't remember a Muslim rant, but I wouldn't be surprised.
In that Jew rant, whether he went with that as well. I remember it being something. Let's not falsify.
Look, if anybody's got the evidence of a Muslim rant, you know, let us know. We'll count that on there as well. Anyway, what's next in the series, says Callum. Yeah, it is getting a little bit episodic, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, we have some feedback, Josh.
We do.
We always like in the after show to do our feedback. We actually have one feedback this week. This is actually from Geek Betty, our very, very esteemed fan. And it's very short. She basically says, what a great episode. David, Josh, and Celine, you were just fantastic. This is actually in reference to episode 91. For those who don't know, it's the Twilight episode. It was the Eclipse episode.
Oh, nice.
It says, the ep was so energetic and passionate even before the Eclipse review. You make a formidable team. I'm so sorry I can't make it into the Geek Actually chat room. I listen to it later, usually on public transport, and always want to jump in with comments that I've well and truly forgotten by the time I'm back at my computer and able to write something. Can I just say, Celine is a Geek Actually Molly Wood. And for those who listen to a lot of geek podcast, Molly Wood works for CNET, and she's fabulous. And yes, Celine is fast becoming our Molly Wood. I think when Celine dropped the C word, that Molly goes is renowned for going off on rants. They call them Molly rants. So Celine will be back with us In a couple of weeks, I think it is. Yeah, it's not next week because we've got Katrina, but she'll be back in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, no, it's good. So thank you very much, Geek Betty. You can send your feedback at feedback@geekactually.com. And we also have a voicemail line, which I'm going to bring up on screen for our chat room, which, of course, is 02-8011-3167. You can leave us a message there for playing on the show. And if you are outside of the Sydney area and don't want to spend money, you can send us an MP3 file. Just record it on your cam. Just try and make sure it's clear so that we can actually play it. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to get onto this review. Mel's kind of taken up our time a little bit, but we actually do have another review this week, which was a real surprise. It was kind of an eye-opener, actually. But you made a very interesting observation, which we'll come back to. The review for our after show here is The Runaways, which for those who are younger than, I don't know, 35, may not be familiar with The Runaways, but The Runaways was a young teen group. It was a female power group in the 70s, 75, I think it was 76. Mm. Joan Jett, who went on to have a very strong career afterwards, basically wanted to be a female rock and roller and a guitar player. And in those days, women didn't lead bands, let alone play guitar. In fact, there's a scene in the film where her music teacher her music teacher actually says, women don't play electric guitar, you know? Mm. And so Joan Jett goes about trying to form this band up, and the film actually charts the early days of the group The Runaways, which was her first group before she went off solo. Now, The Runaways were a smash success, but they basically imploded on themselves, as teenagers tend to do. Now, we have a trailer here for The Runaways. Just to let people know, The Runaways stars Kristen Stewart. And now, this was one of the reasons why we were hesitant on this film. Kristen Stewart from the Twilight Saga. I'm not a huge Kristen Stewart fan.
I don't think either of us are.
No. I find her really, really kind of an obnoxious emo girl who has no personality of her own, in effect. And so when Holly, when she was on our show a few months ago, said she had seen The Runaways and it was really good, Josh and I were kind of like, I don't know.
Also because she does like Twilight.
And she does like Twilight, and she did like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. No, what's it called? Alice in Wonderland. And so we were kind of, umming and eyeing about it. Anyway, the point is that we got to see it, and it opens nationwide this week. So by the time the audio listeners listen to this, it's actually opening tomorrow. For the people in the live chat room, it'll open on Thursday. And Kristen Stewart was perfectly cast as Joan Jett.
I think that's what we want to make sure. We'll come back to
that. Yeah, we'll come back to that. Let's have a look at the trailer, if I can find the trailer here. It is here somewhere. Yeah, here it is. Let's have a look at this trailer really quickly. This is the trailer for The Runaways.
My name is Cherie, and my life was ready for a change.
It really looks terrible.
Good.
It all started with Joan.
I'm Joan Jett. I want to start an all-girl rock band.
Once we met.
We love your look. We are choosing you to be a part of rock and roll history.
We did what no one else thought we could do.
You know how many bands think they're going to make it?
Well, excuse me, but I don't want to work at the Puffin Fries for the rest of my life.
People said we were a bad influence.
Open up, you filthy vomit.
But who are they to tell us that?
What is this? It ain't baby shampoo.
We were about to make rock and roll history.
We did it.
Mercury Records.
We got signed.
We got signed!
The Runaways have the most chance of any group I've seen over and over to tear this world apart.
With my family.
Your family? Are we not your family now?
We were the first girls to rock. And we did it the only way we knew how. On our own.
Okay, so that was the trailer for The Runaways. Now, before we go any further, I guess it would be remiss of us to say we need to say more about what The Runaways is in the sense of... Now, what the hell is my thing gone? Directed by Floria Sigismondi. Now, I've never heard of this woman before. No. And written by her as well, based on the book by Cherie Curry. Now, this was the thing that actually got me really intrigued, was the fact that the film is not a flattering portrait of Cherie Curry, and the fact that in the end credits you actually notice that Joan Jett was one of the producers of the film. So they obviously were right behind this, and they weren't going to shy away from showing the bad side of this as well. Yeah. And so I did appreciate that about the film. The film stars Kristen Stewart, as we said, as Joan Jett, Dakota Fanning as Cherie Curry, who was the lead singer of The Runaways, Michael Shannon as Kim Fowley, their agent, and the rest of the cast, really, we don't know. Most of them were unknown.
They were really unnoticeable. They really made no effect on
the film. I mean, they've got the occasional line here and there that's kind of good, or they looked good in the roles and so forth. The only other actor who kind of had any major impact in the film probably was her sister, who I can find the name of, but I'll look for it in a minute, playing Dakota Fanning's sister. And the interesting thing about her character was that Cherie Curry and her sister were the absolute opposite at the beginning as they were at the end. Her sister was the one who was all together, and she was the one who was going to make something of her life, and Cherie Curry just kind of followed her around. And of course, Cherie Curry became this megastar, and her sister ended up working at the taco hut and having to look after the sick father, and her life was completely opposite. So I found that really, it's a really interesting biopic of these people because it doesn't pull punches, and I really like that. And the real revelation here, of course, is Dakota Fanning, who is making that transition to adult roles now, and she really does shine in this as Cherie Curry. She's very good.
Which is good because she's starting really early. It's like she still really has that young person look.
Well, she's only 17 or something. She's still young.
You can really feel that in the role. It's like she really does feel like she's playing outside the scope of what you would expect someone of that age to play. And she was definitely probably the highlight of the film. As much as some of the other characters really sort of made us laugh or threw some of the best lines.
I think the two standout actors, we'll come back to Kristen Stewart in a minute. She's not actually a standout actress, but we'll come back to her in a second. The two standout actors were Dakota Fanning and Michael Shannon.
Who is, in my opinion, he just takes the film. It's just every scene he's in it, he really just stands out with these really intense, in-your-face, managerial kind of speeches and these bizarre ways of doing things that I just adore. Like, I mean, the thing that I love is the band was all about sleaze and it was all about selling that real kind of like over-the-top female sexuality. But you could tell it was never him that was really into that. Like, he never came off as seedy towards the girls.
No.
It was always that kind of, I need you to be like this because that's going to make us money.
Well, that's right. And you know he's a seedy character because there's that one sequence where he's talking to Joan on the phone. And while he's talking to her on the phone, he's actually fucking a girl at his desk.
Yeah.
And so he is a seedy, horrible character, but never to them.
Yeah, exactly.
He never tries to take advantage of them.
They're the cash cow, they're the money. Yeah. And I mean, like, this guy went on to produce Kiss and so on and so forth, like, as a real person.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the guy was talented and he really had an eye for what he wanted as a concept out of the people. And, like, I really love the way that came across. Some of my favorite lines of the film all come from him. The lines where he'll be giving them these horribly, like, half inspirational speeches, half, like, especially towards Cherie, because Cherie was so... came into it with such a different idea of what she was going to do, and she decided she wanted the fame and didn't really understand that that meant she would continually sell herself like that. And you see that that's never really right until the end occurred to her, that that's sort of what's happened, is she's lost her dream in amongst everything. But what I love is the fact that his speeches are mostly to her, and they're trying to sell exactly the opposite of what she's feeling right at that exact point. But there's these... Oh, they were just disgusting speeches, but so well delivered. And of course, my favorite line of the film is towards the end, where she starts to take everything a little bit, you know, too heavily. And there's the one moment where she reads an article basically destroying her as a person. And there's that thing where he kind of slaps her in the face with it and then says, it's press, not publicity. Get used to that.
Yeah.
And it's the real truth of the industry, is that kind of world, which is that I am going to sell you both ways, because either way, we're going to get credit.
Whatever gets publicity, that's right. Exactly. Whatever gets bums on seats, basically.
He says it so. The thing about his delivery is it never comes across like he's attacking them. He's just being so blunt and visceral. And that's just in his nature, and it's that real thing where he thinks even to that point that he's still got control of it. And it really was his baby, and like he really was even right.
Well, he thought he was, and in fact he was making history.
Yeah,
you know, and that was his thing. He was determined that this was going to be the game changing event, and it really was. You know, I mean, Susie Quattro, granted, was already on the scene.
Yeah.
Susie Quattro was, in fact, Joan Jett's inspiration. Mm. But Susie Quattro still lived in a man's world. Her band were men, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Joan's idea of a band was all women.
Yeah.
She wanted all women on that stage. She wanted a full female empowerment thing going on. And she achieved that. Ironically, and you were just pointing out that the music in the trailer, a lot of those Joan Jett's music from post-Runaways, and that is actually at the end of the film. And Joan wrote most of the music for The Runaways, so they were her songs. But her songwriting got better when she left The Runaways.
Well, I mean, it's always been a discussed point that her time in The Runaways was what solidified her as such a strong person when she left, because she had tried. I mean, you see it throughout the film. Her character was the one that had to keep everybody in control. She had to keep the band in control. You had Kim over the phone basically saying, I need you to make sure everything's happening.
Yeah.
Everything was left on her head. And she held it all together. And it's like coming out the other end of that really kind of solidified, because she knew so much about every aspect of the business at that stage. She could sell herself because she had done so much of the band side of things. She had, you know, run the band while they were over there. She had kept everybody in line. She was in control. She was, you know.
And she was also touring a lot because she was in love with Cherie Curry as well. And you can see that throughout the whole film. Because, I mean, it's no secret, Joan Jett is a lesbian.
Yeah.
And this film does, it touches on it, but it doesn't really. It doesn't
focus on it, and I really like that. Yeah,
I do too.
Because a lot of these films get lost in that. Like,
yeah, there's one scene in it where it is fairly obvious and fairly blatant. When it's in the trailer where they're getting out of bed together. But other than that scene, there's lots of tenderness between them, but it's never thrown down your face. But there is obviously that conflict in Joan, because Cherie Curry is acting like a brat, and she wants to, and like that studio scene that you're talking about with the thing is a real highlight to that, where she's just trying to get it finished. She just wants the recording finished, you know?
Yeah.
And she's got everybody fighting.
That scene is the best part of the movie, because even when everything breaks down and she leaves, the moment, the last moment between her and Joan before they part ways is, again, really powerful as well. Mm. So, I mean, that worked really well as well.
Yeah, no, it's a sensational film. And in our chat room, Numero Zero has said it looks like a DVD watch if you watch it at all. I disagree with you 100%.
Look, I mean, if any part of you enjoys that kind of female rock kind of an aspect, you're not going to be let down from the music point of view. They do the songs very well.
But also just from a film point of view, the film is really well shot. It really, really captures the era. I mean, 1975 looks like 1975.
Oh, dude, the filters, the camera work, the great drug hallucination scenes.
And it's all shot in glorious 2.35 widescreen. It looks fantastic on the big screen. The sound is really clear. You can actually...
Oh, yeah, but sound is clear, but that really raw 70s feel.
Absolutely.
And it perfectly timed for this movie to come out, because that is so apparent in music at the moment. Mm. We've really gone back to that kind of raw
sound.
Also,
the other thing that is really kind of inspiring about this film is the fact that they do their own vocals.
Mm.
So you've actually got Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning singing the songs. They're not lip-syncing. They are actually doing those songs. And yes, okay, granted, they are not as good as Joan Jett or even the original Curry, they're doing a damn good job. You know, this is very much in the walk the line type territory.
Exactly,
you know?
But I also really like the way that the song develops, especially the first few times.
Oh, Cherry Bomb sounds terrible when they start.
Cherry Bomb sounds terrible, but you can hear every time she gets a little bit more closer to the way that the actual song sounded. And it's like, it's that great thing, especially towards the end where she starts to really kind of push the role.
Well, it's when she embraces that sexuality and she comes out in the lingerie and they go, oh man, you're going to get us arrested. Because, I mean, we have to remember she's walking out on stage in lingerie to sing this song all about sex and getting the guy hard, and she is only 16.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh man, you're just pushing boundaries right, left, and center. No, it is really good. Now let's come back to Kristen Stewart, because I think you made a really interesting observation when we talked this morning, where you said you weren't sure if she was giving a really good performance or whether it was just brilliant casting.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that deserves to be discussed, because I actually quickly answered that, because I actually agree, I think, with you, where I would say I think it's brilliant casting.
I think on the most part it is, because I still see the same Kirsten Stewart from Twilight in there in a lot of scenes, like where it's a scene where she's not really sort of... Like, I mean, she doesn't have any great deliveries in the film. Like, she doesn't have any brilliant lines or world-changing experiences. And like, the film never really, especially for the first three quarters, doesn't really center around her.
No.
She is that really downtrodden character, so she will only speak once every, like...
And she doesn't know who she is at that point. And that's what's so neat about the characters, the fact that Joan herself hasn't found herself yet.
Exactly.
She's kind of trying to skirt two worlds. She wants what she wants, but she's not getting exactly what she wants. And look, she hasn't developed yet.
Exactly. She plays... like, I give her credit to some extent, because... The movements, the nuances of sort of her performance and how she projects that downtrodden character are definitely her own. And so she definitely deserves credit for doing a hell of a lot better job than what she's done in the Twilight
films. Numero Zero in our chat room has said, maybe the lack of personality allows her to soak up her characters like a sponge. Well said.
She
well
envelops
said,
them.
Yeah, well said.
Wow.
Well, that's very, very astute, I must
say.
That's
fantastic.
No, I thought she really embraced the character of Joan. And we also see that change. Now, we're not spoiling the film, because it is a real life film, and there's certain scenes
we're talking about a personality.
But in the final one of the final scenes in the film, when she's on the radio show being interviewed, she's so much more like Joan Jett now that we know.
Yeah.
And so you can actually see there is progression in the character. She's not still just doing that whole downtrodden thing. And it's like, you look at it and go, so there has been craftsmanship in the role. And I respect her for that. And I respect the fact that I think now that makes two films that I haven't minded Kristen Stewart in. And the rest you can pretty much write off. But I quite liked her in Zathura as well, as the bratty sister.
I think it comes down to casting.
I think it comes into casting. I think she was cast as the perfect character for her. And I think somebody identified that and went, that's it. Just absolutely nailed it. And once again, Dakota Fanning is creepy beyond her years, really. I mean, she's been an amazing actress since she was a child. I think she's going to be able to do what a lot of them can't do, which is make that transition into adult films. I wasn't sure.
I want to see her do a perfect transition, because there's so few child actors that actually do that. They'll fall away and then come back once they've found themselves. But to find an actor that can walk the line right through.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, some of her mid-movies, some of the ones sort of, you know, your hide and seeks and so on and so forth, they're not... Absolutely.
But she's still really good.
She was good in them, but she's not amazing in them. But what I'm saying is, if she can make that transition right across, because at this point she's playing the roles around.
I was a little concerned. I've got to admit, I was a little concerned about her progression into more adult roles when I saw Push, because I went, oh, maybe she's not going to make this transition very well.
That's the movie. That's not her.
But that, yeah, you're right. That's the movie, not her. And it would seem that she, with this film, has turned around and been able to prove to us that there is more to her than that. I really, really enjoyed The Runaways. I have to say that I saw it as a preview screening a couple weeks ago and haven't stopped thinking about it since I saw it. I do love a really good drama, and but the problem with a lot of dramatic films is that they fall flat. And so you kind of go, oh, really, was it worth my time? So when an excellent drama comes along, and in particular a really good biopic comes along, you sit there and go,
dude,
wow.
A musical biopic. Like, they follow very particular storylines, so they all do fall into this horrible cliche a lot of the time. Whenever you get these kind of movies, like Walk the Line, or you name any of them.
Walk the Line was very good, though.
Look, Walk the Line was very good, but incredibly, it followed the exact principle of every movie that it is. It's like, you know, troubled childhood leads to, you know, one shot gets one, drugs wrecks movie career, wrecks music career. Person finds himself, person finishes off on a high note. That is the movie in itself, right?
Yeah, and so unfortunately, it's kind of, you're kind of stuck with the idea of biopic, so, because you're always dealing. What makes an inspired biopic is the fact that these people have adversity. The problem is that they all start to feel a little bit same old, same old.
They are all very same old. What I really liked about this film is it doesn't, it's the whole package. It's not just the story or the characters that hold you up. It's the whole general feeling of the
era. I also like the fact that we didn't dwell on their success. No. We had,
if anything, we completely wash over it.
We washed over it because we have an hour and a bit of the build up to the Runaways, to the way they finally, and there's that wonderful scene where they're in Japan and the glass wall gets knocked down and all that sort of stuff. And then we cut to that recording studio scene, and it's like they had five albums. We didn't see any of that time.
No, you know? Exactly.
So we didn't need to see that because that was the good times. Mm. We weren't there for that. We were there to see these characters when they were actually doing something interesting. Mm. So it was interesting to see them just say, well, that's the success part. That's kind of boring. We want to see what's actually happening with these people, you know? Mm. And so I did like that. I like the fact that we aren't going to dwell on all of that success. We're going to have a look at what actually was their rise and then their fall.
Exactly.
You know?
We left out all the normal cliche music bioptic bits, and we just went through a very interesting story.
Now I feel proud. Yeah. Like Numero Zero says, that was her and Zathura? I hadn't even made the connection. Yeah, that's how I felt. Numero Zero says, now I'll say after your review, I'm more interested. Yeah. Good. Thank you. We've touched somebody.
Yeah. Wonderful. I'm in agreement with you, Dave. I think everyone that has a musical bone in your body and enjoys any music from that era needs to watch this film just to really understand that whole musical part. Because, I mean, like, as someone from, you know, sort of growing up in that area with those vinyls around at the time that were in people's collections that I used to sit down and listen to, I knew the music. I never knew the culture behind it. Mm. You never know the story behind these people because at that stage, I hadn't attached any sort of personality to these people. It's just music to me. And it's like when I watch this, I must admit, there's a whole other part that I really sort of learnt about that era. And I'm really glad I watched that film.
And as somebody who was actually a child in that era, I have to say they captured the 70s magnificently. We've said it before, but I'll just touch on this really quick. The 70s is a really hard era to recreate.
Even where they recorded and stuff like that, just that tiny little trailer in the middle of nowhere, and it was just sound.
Yeah.
There was no recording equipment, no nothing. They practice in a fucking trailer
in the middle of nowhere.
And there were like, there's like no room. It's like in the back, the person on the drums is just literally wedged into a corner. It was brilliant. I loved it.
The 70s is a particularly hard era to recreate because I've seen so many films where it's the 70s. They say, oh, give them the surfer hairdo and the big collars.
And the mustache.
And the mustache, and it's done. The 70s, people actually looked different in the 70s. Body types were different. The style of everything was different. It was a very different era. And it's actually a really hard one to recreate authentically. Mm. I've actually now only seen two films that have really captured that. One was Dazed and Confused, which absolutely perfectly looked like my hometown. I mean, it was just eerie how well he captured the 70s and this film. This film, because their body types and everything.
All right, well, TV shows as well you should definitely check out. I don't know. I thought the...
Life on Mars.
Life on Mars brilliantly captures the...
Not the American version.
Not the American.
The British version.
The British version perfectly captures like that kind of style of living at that stage.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've seen several episodes of Life on Mars, and yes, the period detail is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm going to say highly recommended, and I say definitely go see it in the cinema. Mm-hmm. It is well worth seeing in the cinema. You'll come out and you'll learn something as well, because you'll learn something a little bit about these characters. I've been a Joan Jett fan for years. I've loved Joan Jett, and it's really interesting to see that backstory and to see what actually led to her solo career. So I was very impressed by it. Josh, recommended?
Yes.
Fantastic.
That's it.
That's it. Recommended. All right. So I think we're pretty much done here for the day. We've got one more video to go out on. Now, in our main show, we talked about Old Spice commercials, and we talked about "Hello, ladies, how are you? Fantastic." And we love the Old Spice. But prior to that guy, prior to him, and prior to this new campaign, Old Spice was already doing some pretty funny ads. Bruce Campbell did two. One with the Hungry Like a Wolf one is genius. But Neil Patrick Harris also did one. And if you haven't seen any of these, all you have to do is go to YouTube, type in Old Spice, and you'll just get like this list of Old Spice ads that you can go through. Josh and I did this a few weeks ago, and we were just laughing so hard. And I thought we'd end the show this week with Neil Patrick Harris, because we're both big Neil Patrick Harris fans. Yes. The man can do no wrong. And this was his Old Spice ad. So we're going to say goodbye. Oh, actually, before we say goodbye, Josh, tell us about this charity thing again.
Yes. All right, cool. Well, two things. Number one, of course, I'm part of a website called rawdlc.com. The information will be coming up very soon on that. If anybody wants to follow up on it, or if you hear this and want to know it a little more, we are taking part in a charity event, which is going to hopefully, with everything running the way it should be happening next Friday right through to next Sunday. And what it is a 48-hour marathon of Borderlands.
So let me just make sure, because you know people listen to podcasts at all Friday times, 16th. Of course. Friday the 16th of July.
Mm. Okay. It is going out on it's going out via Ustream. It's all going to be done live, and we are doing a 48-hour Borderlands marathon for Child's Play, which over here in Australia is a charity that buys entertainment equipment for hospitals to give children something to do while they're waiting for surgery or whatever. They're a great charity, very, very good people, and we are trying to raise as much money as we possibly can. So if anybody wants to come along, all the details will be available at both rawdlc.com and also Game Arena. Mm-hmm. If you guys go there, if you've got $5 spare or something like that, it'll all be PayPal, so just chuck it through. Very simple to do. It'll all be on the website, and basically all that money then goes to charity. We have a total figure we are trying to aim for, but the boys have been changing it due to more support.
And let me just stress one more time: the Geek Action Network is well behind this, because for anybody who's been listening for a long time, you know that my son is actually recovered from having leukemia, and it's people like Child's Play who actually made his time stays in hospitals and so forth bearable. And so, as somebody who has spent a great deal of time at the Children's Hospital, I would say, please give to this. This is well worth it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Absolutely.
Fantastic. All right. And so they can go to rawdlc.com for any information on this coming up to July 16th event. Yes. And we are, I was saying, we were joking before, but we are going to try and see if we can actually feed their feed into our board and check in on them during next week's show. So it should be kind of fun. All right. If you agree or disagree with anything we've had to say on this review or anything else we've talked about, or you just have something that we want to get off your chest, feedback@geekactually.com is the email address. 02-8011-3167 is the voicemail line, or you can send us an MP3. We have no problem with that whatsoever. We're going to, now we're finally going to say, let's play our video and get out of here for the day. One last reminder before we go. This is the last Geek Actually week of this format. This show, however, the Geek Actually after show, doesn't really change at all. So it's not really going to affect this show. But we are going to, on Saturday, the 17th of July, episode 93, and continuity, by the way, will maintain. So all three shows are going to start at episode 93, so that it's the same continuity across all of them. And there will be Tech Actually, Film Actually, and Geek Actually After Show as three separate shows. And for the live viewers, it'll be just like today. It will record straight through. It'll be first Tech, then Film, then the After Show. And we'll just be taking a little break in between each one. But it'll be three separate shows, but it'll all be recorded simultaneously. Or actually not simultaneously, concurrently, I should say. So please bear with us. It's going to be a little bit messy for the first couple of weeks while we get all the feeds organized. Stick with us, though. And we, as I say, geekactually.com is your source of all information on all of this change. All right. The reason why we're keeping continuity as well, Josh, is so that we still have our 100th episode celebration.
So wait, but do we decide how we're going to do that? Is that 100 of the end of, like, are we counting it?
It's just 100 episodes of Geek Actually. So what we'll do is we'll put it in the after show.
Okay, cool.
We'll put it in the after show because that's kind of the mainstay of it all. So we'll put it in there, and that'll be our 100th celebration. That's only 8 weeks away. So it's not far now. So bear with us over this whole feed issue, and please make sure you subscribe to the shows that you are most interested in. I would say subscribe to them all because we're just wonderful. But but if you are just interested in tech, you don't have to sit through the film component anymore. If you're just interested in film, you don't have to get bored by the tech. So this is why we're doing it. All right, we're going to get out of here. Here's Neil Patrick Harris to take us out. And I've lost his ad now. Here it is. Here he's on the board. All right, this is Neil Patrick Harris's Old Spice ad. I hope you enjoy. We'll see you all next Saturday.
Bye.
Chronic body odor ruins lives. Hi. As a former make-believe doctor, there's one product I can recommend against the torment of excessive wetness and body odor. Old Spice Pro Strength Antiperspirant. It's prescription strength wetness protection, but you don't need a prescription to get it. That's why I can recommend it. I used to be a doctor for pretend. We'll be right back.